Well, hello again to everybody out there at TFMR. Hey, we got another one of these special podcasts for you, and I thought because he was willing to come on and talk, I thought I would take him up on it. I'm sitting here visiting with my pal Andrew McGuire, who many of you are familiar with. Andy, if you've been in the gold space for any amount of time, you know who he is. He's actually president and CEO of his own company, Gold Star Global Limited, primarily working as a wholesaler on the wholesale side of the market. He also sits on the advisory board of the Allocated Bullion Exchange, and no one is a better advocate for our cause and in the arena fighting every day. And so I thought, gosh, I'm happy to call him a friend and happy to have him join us. Andy, thank you for taking some time, my friend.
Craig, it's always great to visit with you. And really, if we're just chatting here, I think that's what I like about when we do things like this. We're just chatting as if it's just the two of us.
And we'll just let everybody listen in on the conversation.
Absolutely.
Well,
absolutely.
You started making some fresh waves a couple of weeks ago, my friend. You sent me one of your Sunday commentaries that you provide for your clients. And you write those up every Sunday. But it was so important, you thought, that you wanted to make it public. So we made it a guest post at TFMR, and I know it made the rounds through the community. But you've got an inkling that we are sitting on the cusp of change. And you talk about not only, finally, a breakdown of the paper markets and a price reset, but you're starting to get kind of specific in a time frame as well. So, I mean, kind of remind everybody or sum up again for everybody what you're seeing and why you're confident that this is coming.
Yeah, Craig. Well, I mean, we're talking about it from a wholesale market perspective. And I think that's probably a unique an angle that, I mean, many, many people talk about the market and the technical levels and the correlations, et cetera, et cetera. But we must never forget there is a physical side to this market, and there is a lot of uncertainty out there. And yes, we've got rate hikes on the agenda. We've got Fed speak. We've got market gaming that goes on. But what we are noticing from a physical market perspective is that we are seeing the very lifeblood liquidity from the paper market flowing out into the physical markets. And that is something which I have not seen before to such a degree. Now, you know, I'm a very good friend of mine, and a lot of people know Hugo Salinas Price. And Hugo's got a mine of his own, and I visited him. We had a dinner in Mexico not that long ago, and we're talking, and he said, you know, we were talking, and this is one of the wisest people I know, and he said to me, you know, Andy, I think I now see that the physical market is starting to impact the paper market at last. And he's been so skeptical about this. And you know what? That is exactly what we're seeing. And I think that's the exciting thing. Now people are saying, oh, yeah. I mean, Craig, next thing is you're going to say is like, you know, yeah, but, you know, people are saying, yeah, McGuire says this, McGuire says that. Right. And, yeah, look, we've gone down again. Well, yeah, we've gone down again. But gone down? Like, I made a statement, I think it was the 19th of February or whatever it was, and I said, you know, we've got a gold price, we've got a reset on the way. And that's based upon what we can talk about in a minute, which is from a wholesale market perspective. But people, you know, a non-subscriber of mine came through on an email last night, and it did make me laugh. And you got it wrong. You've had it wrong for the last 6 years. And I said, look, here, excuse me. Thanks for the kind compliments. But you're either a troll, in which case jog on, or you are a speculator, a margin speculator. And if that's what you are, and you've just lost money, and you feel irate enough to have a go at me, who is generally making market comments and not guiding you through the market, then you are the problem, and that you are the fuel that actually provides the kind of little pullback that we're getting right now,
right.
And it distorts the whole picture. Now, I'm talking about a wholesale market here. I'm talking about rock solid gold bullion in demand by central banks and sovereigns and institutionals who are looking to hedge risk And as we know, institutionals, if you're in the risk on game and you're chasing a stock market bubble, you better have some fire insurance. So we're seeing that as well. So we're seeing a whole gambit of physical interest. Now, a lot of these guys, unfortunately, are invested in what you call digital gold. I think you call it digital gold. Yeah. Synthetic gold, I call it. Same thing, you know. And yeah, they're in unallocated accounts and they think, oh, I'm hedged here. Well, obviously, that's not the case. So now we've got what? I think I said, I think I even went as far as to say what the aggregated central bank size and sovereign size. And bear in mind, these are competing. They're not all one group of people sitting together. These are all competing in the market to get the best price and to accumulate physical based upon what the technicals are saying and what's going on right now. Do we have to chase it higher? Or can we sit back and wait for it to come to us? And that's, we have daily wholesale meetings. And I sit with some of the largest liquidity providers and takers that on the planet Earth. And these guys are so well connected with everyone from the generals in China to right across the board to the largest Indian wholesalers that sit at these meetings with us. And we get a really good sense of where these wholesale levels are.
And isn't it akin, Andy? I mean, we're talking about two separate things, paper trading and in tonnage size physical orders. But there are some similarities there that I think the paper trader can understand. And I mean, in a rising market, you might be trailing it up, you know, with some limit orders. You know, if it pulls back to here, I'm going to get in because we're in a bullish trend. But in a declining market, you might be constantly marking down where you want to buy. Well, okay, it's come down to this level, but I don't think we're done yet. So I'm going to move my orders down $10 and wait and see if I get filled. People do that trading paper all the time. I mean, that's roughly what you're talking about in the physical market too, right?
Well, absolutely, because I mean, as a wholesaler, I have to perform the best I can to create alpha for my clients, and I'm typical of any other wholesaler out there. We have orders, we have large order books, but I'm not going to just go out and buy everything today at once and drive the market up. No, obviously we have to provide the best service for our clients, create as much alpha as possible based upon where we think the optimum levels are. And you're absolutely right. So of course, this is where the lines are crossing. This is the break between the physical and the paper market that we're talking about. This exact point where we see the need to actually start to compete against each other to get those physical orders filled. And, you know, so yeah, we be able to sit back on every non-farm payrolls, on every Fed speak, and have the luxury of saying, you know what, let's just sit back and wait for the price to come to us, and we'll decide where we're going to move in, and we'll start averaging in. And that changed. That changed in December of 16. That changed when we hit 11:30. Now, I knew, and we telegraphed this to all our clients, this is it. It cannot go below this level. Why? Because we knew the size of physical orders below that level pitched against what available synthetic open interest could possibly be sold into it. We knew that there is no way that level could be pierced. So that was level number one. Guess what? That got run once only. It got front run by the commercials who have absolutely the same. Look, they know exactly what I know, which is they're sitting right in the same area looking at, well, you know, you've got JP Morgan front running Bank of China. You've got, you know, the kilo bar market, for example, is small enough to actually know when the big players are in there. And that's why ABX, and we'll talk about ABX probably in a minute, but that's why ABX is so important, because it provides an anonymity for these large size sovereigns and to be purchasing gold without revealing their footprints. So essentially we've got these orders that are building up at these levels. So no one got filled. Right. I mean, really, no one got filled. So it was time to raise up. Then we saw there's a very obvious 5-0. I think it was 1172.60. I think that's based upon the high from I think that was based upon the high from 2011 all the way down. I haven't got it in front of me, yeah, but no, so, I think it was 11. Yeah. So we knew, and that was the level that we all discussed at a meeting. Which suddenly price took off. No one got filled. So then we all got filled on a buy stop at 1172.60. We knew that was, you're going to go through there. You see, always have a FIBO dance. There are people that, and this is where technicals come in as well, because obviously we've got to keep those in mind. And so when we saw that FIBO dance start, and there are people that make a living just trading the FIBOs.
Right.
And so, you know that, you see it, you get a breach, you come back, there's somebody who's going to short the hell out of the FIBO because that's the stand they're going to make. And it may work until it doesn't work. And then it becomes support. And at that point there, the FIBO guys are then the buyers. So it's, you know, they're agnostic. These guys are not necessarily the directional HF guys behind the directional HFTs that will often target those levels to bring these neutral agnostic guys in to do their selling or buying. So we all got filled at that level. That was the last time, Craig, that was the last time we saw sovereign size buying get filled, because the next thing, everything moves up to 12. 1204, in fact, it was. And where are we? We're around back to that level now.
Right.
And that was, again, that was front run. Now, then I mentioned 1222. That has finally become a physical accumulation area again. And what has happened is the open interest, a sufficient amount of synthetic open interest had chased price. And this is what we watch too, as much as you do and as much as we track this stuff. It's so important because it tells us, hang on a minute, the price has gone up to 1260. Mm-hmm. There is no way these guys these commercials and officials, and we all know that officials are involved, can now short with absolute impunity because they know that every single one of these of this open interest above the 1222 area where we started to see the layer begin again all the way down into the 12s. We knew that anything above that level was going to be naked shorted. And sure enough, and that's all that's happened now, is that the usual story, we've got the synthetic guys, which we know or guarantee will never take delivery, have moved above where a critical support level is, and sufficiently so. And when you get 30, 40, the higher, you get kind of $40, $50 above, you then can generate enough momentum to smack that sucker down.
Right.
And to breach, to have enough fuel, ignite enough fuel to actually freak everybody out, target stops where they're so obvious, and you can then pierce a physical support level and know that you've got sufficient open interest to offset that. And you know, people say, well, yeah, but how? Well, let's not forget that apart from all of the COMEX non-delivery positions, there's such a thing as an exchange for physical. So you can actually take a COMEX contract and you can convert that into a spot contract and you can actually take delivery of that. And so, you know, so we're now seeing, what we're seeing is certain elements are starting to play this game against the paper shorts. So
right.
Yeah, we've now got we had enough momentum to pierce into the 1222 area, to come into the low 12s, and to allow, there's sufficient naked short open interest to offset these positions with the commercials covering 1-to-1 against every short position that these specs are now putting on. And we all know that you can trigger a synthetic player to go long or short based upon a single trend line. You pierce the 100-day moving average,
right.
You pierce the 50-day moving average, and of course it's a guarantee. Not only are you dipping into a huge area of short cover that you've targeted illegally, of course, but you're also turning these guys into shorts. Now, I'm not saying they're naked short. Some are. Some of the aggressive specs, and I've seen a lot of people out on the blogosphere. I'm short gold here. I'm short silver here. Right, okay, be my guest. But on the other hand, there are people now saying, well, yeah, I need to short some positions to offset my longs. Regardless of that, with the commercials going long and covering into the physical support levels, what we're seeing is these positions are actually creating short cover for a short covering rally on the upside. So, you know, you've got fuel being covered, short covering fuel on the downside. You're now sucking in enough synthetic short open interest to actually, when you're ready and when it reaches the point where you've run out of sufficient long open interest to offset the strong physical buying that's going on, then everyone knows that game is up. And then you suddenly, the commercials then use that short cover to offset some of the investment that they investment. I put investment in inverted brackets. To only look at the silver smash.
Right.
You know, look at that bar and call that an investment. It was an investment in attacking. And this is, it's those examples which are easy just to draw attention to, because we see this on a micro level every day. Well, that was a perfect example of how ignition was. And if you remember when it happened, there was no signal to make that happen.
Right, right.
There was nothing.
Right,
nothing.
Right. It just all of a sudden, we've saw that a couple times last fall too, mainly to take out certain moving averages to get the computers all to sell at once, just off of that queue, as you mentioned. But you know, Andy, I think on a bigger picture, I appreciate you going through and explaining all of that. And that's extremely valuable, the information that you were just talking about. But on a bigger picture is this idea that there's this reset coming, that what we at least see on the COMEX as a short position is trapped. I mean, you mentioned price coming down in December. You know, when it came down in December of 2015, the net positioning of the commercials was completely washed out to net flat, which we'd never seen before. But when it came down in 2016, the net position was still like 120,000 contracts short. And it's expanded again here in the first couple of months of this year, as obviously they're shorting into the speculators buying. You're talking, though, about finally having a reset, finally having this paper market collapse, which is something that we're all waiting for. You know that. I mean, this is all what we've been talking about. This can't go on forever. But to that point, though, that it can't go on forever, when we know about the leverage being 92 times or 100 times to one, I mean, what prevents, I mean, is there enough ongoing physical demand that won't reset lower looking for price to come down that we will actually squeeze the banks and the commercials enough to break the market? Because what's to prevent them from going to 200 to 1, to 3, to just keep shorting? You know, I don't care. We're just going to, like last year, Andy, we saw open interest go, I mean, the price was only 1370, but they ran open interest all the way up to 650,000 contracts, a new all-time high. I mean, they just were just content to just keep shorting and shorting and issuing the shorts and issuing the paper so that the speculators would buy it until finally the momentum ran out and they tipped over, you know, and they started jawboning interest rates higher and all that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, all those spec longs headed for the hills and the bank started buying them all back. I mean, how does this ever end? I mean, you're confident that it's going to end in the next, you know, several months, but how and why would it end now? What are you seeing? What's the big deal?
Yeah, great. Well, this is it. It's exactly what I'm saying. It's the very fact that the physical market is actually sucking this liquidity out of the paper market. Now, bear in mind, you can add as many shorts as you wish. You can create unlimited amount of paper shorts, but what that's doing is translating into a spot price that is deliverable.
Right.
And bearing in mind that so much business now, and look, out of the 600 tons of gold and the 5,000 tons of silver that gets cleared every single day in London, we see in gold, we see 5 to 7 tons getting delivered.
Right.
Now, we talk about 92 to 1. 92-1, as the Reserve Bank of India said, does not account for the derivative positions, which there are billions of. Right. This is, it's more like, God knows, it could be 500-1, it could be more. I mean, the thing is, this 92-1, you come to a point where if somebody takes that delivery, it converts that paper price that you've just swamped, you've diluted the paper price of gold to the point where you now, someone says, you know what, I want that. I'm not going to take it, much like at 1130 and much like at 1172 and much like now into the 12s. I want that and I'm going to take that and I'm going to build my armory. I'm going to build my cash, my physical reserves. So keep piling it on and it's going to get taken 1-1.
Right.
And the unwind of leverage, and this is the point, you can only reach the point. Now we're seeing not just 92-1, we're seeing plus derivatives. And for the very first time that I can ever remember, Craig, I saw over-the-counter options. Now that is the over-the-counter, I'm not talking about the COMEX options, which just expired last month. I'm talking about the end of the month February option, over-the-counter options that expired at 3 p.m. on the last day of February. That is Bank of International Settlements size and aggregated positioning. They closed on the wrong side of 1250. That was way offside. And that's the first time I've ever seen them lose that battle. And to me, what it is that there was so much physical interest coming in. Uncertainty, the trauma. You can name a thousand reasons why this is a bond market. You can look, I'm not even going to get into the data. I'm sure your guys, and you talk about this all the time. But basically, there comes a point where it just simply translates into someone saying, I'll take it. Right. Well, you can't keep generating more. What are we saying? That's why we're saying there's this abyss building. And this is what we're seeing from a wholesale market perspective. And this is not speculation. This is fact. We are seeing what we saw in 1999 when we saw that abyss open up, and we are seeing the same situation. Yes, the open interest levels are different. Yes, they're not all neutral anymore. Yes, they're still short. But you can't keep adding shorts.
Yeah.
There's a physical side to this market, and that's really what we're saying. Well, plus one other thing, Craig, before we actually have the physical exchanges now transacting. It's not just the spot price that gets delivered in London, which is only 5 to 7 tons. Much more volume is occurring off Loco London, and this spot price is then taken. You take delivery, and an Indian buyer yesterday took big delivery in Dubai for us, and there was one of those large orders. In fact, I said this order was coming in 45 minutes before it came in. I said we're going to have to do this buying before the fix. We bought it, shot the price up for a few bucks. But the point is that these buyers are coming in and taking what's being offered. And so it forces a short-term problem, and then they come in. Well, we've still got enough momentum to do this. But essentially, we can't forget that there is a physical side to this market. And so we've got now ABX coming into the – and this is one of the reasons I'm actually saying that this 90-day window, we have certain products – in ABX that is going to destroy the paper market. And furthermore, we have in the hopper some huge, huge orders for as soon as we hard launch. And the hard launch is, as say, TBA, because I want Tom to come on with me, and we'll talk about that at another time. But essentially what we're saying is that ABX is going to be the alternative exchange to COMEX. And we will even have, as I put in that commentary, electronic vault warrants where people can, who are used to trading on the COMEX, can create a little alpha on their physical positions. But in order to trade, every single person that trades on a physical exchange has to have the physical in there first.
Right.
And that's a novel idea. So,
Which should work.
And I've spoken to second tier LBMA bullion banks who said, well, yeah, well, we don't, none of our clients ever take delivery, but we're worried about counterparty risk. So I say, okay, so if you could trade electronically the same, at the same levels, speeds, and price as if you were trading on the unallocated markets, and you had a physical product behind that electronic transaction, would you not take it? Well, of course we would. And that's where we're, and that's where we're going. And this is where the market's going.
So, Andy, I'm trying to, I'm sitting here thinking while you're talking about the way I've always tried to, I guess, look forward as to how this might end. And I know a lot of folks on my side, and they've heard me, and I say this in interviews a lot, that I compare the global gold market to just a, it's a confidence game. It's not much different from just-in-time delivery at your local supermarket. You know, as long as you believe you can get your gold, you know, whether it's something you're buying and taking delivery of, or whether you're in an unallocated account, and you know, well, yeah, but they tell me I can always show up and sign some papers and they'll get me my gold, so it's okay, I'm not going to worry about it. Or you're in the GLD because you think that's gold, whatever. That if that confidence scheme ever fails, you know, it's like your supermarket just-in-time delivery is fine until there's a blizzard. And then when everybody starts thinking, well, there's not going to be the ability to get milk and bread tomorrow, so I got to go get it today, and everybody shows up and they clear the shelves. And I've always thought that that's how it ends, you know, that finally there's a break in the confidence. You're talking, though, about a couple of other things. One, you know, the physical demand finally overwhelming. And I guess that would cause a break of confidence too. But you're also talking about an alternative, I guess, market structure that could finally break the back of the system as well. One way or the other, we got to make it happen. But it sounds like, again, your confidence level is growing, that's finally coming, that these markets are broken, and that this offtake of physical will finally break these banks. And what they've been doing now for 40 years in a manner that was where they almost broke back in 1999. I mean, that's kind of what you think we're finally building toward, right?
I do. And I just don't see any physical that can bail out these banks who've had these ledger entries placed on their balance sheets by the central banks who have not been. And when we see central bank gold sales, we're talking about rehypothecation. We're talking about settling it in by paper clearing transactions through the LPMLCL every day, where up out of the 600 tons that we see all of these positions netted out amongst a group of a daisy chain of bullion banks. And it's just reached the point where so much physical demand, and this is what happened in 1999, we reached a point where people wanted physical.
Right.
And there isn't any to deliver. And that's when I'm talking about any, there isn't any size to deliver at this price. So that's the problem. And that is why I have to keep saying, from a wholesale market perspective, I can see these footprints. I see the abyss. I saw it in 1999. I'm seeing it again. I had to come out and say something because I really am concerned that people are in paper gold, and I think they should get the hell out of paper gold. Yeah. And I mean, seriously, this is not me calling wolf. It is me saying, I can see this happening. It's going to happen. It's happened once before. There was physical to bail everyone out. There is no physical to bail everyone out. When I say everyone, I'm talking about the too big to fail banks. And so some kind of paper settlement, which is, let's face it, there's no drama as far as the officials are concerned, as central planners. You've got every right to settle all those positions in paper. It wouldn't be considered even a default.
Yeah.
So really, people forget that.
Well, like you're saying, the time to, if you own any paper, unallocated account, the GLD, and if you actually want to have gold, if you actually think you have gold, the time to convert it is what you're saying is right now. One, it would help the process by removing gold from the bank's hands and not playing in their casino anymore. But two, I mean, again, going back to the supermarket analogy, you don't want to show up the day of the blizzard either. You know, when there is no bread, when there is no milk, it's already all been, you know, it's already all gone. Andy, look, you're being very generous with your time. And obviously you and I could sit around and talk all day, and we have in the past. At some point, it'd be more fun to actually have an adult beverage or something and be talking about this kind of stuff. But we could obviously keep on going, but I want to be respectful of your time because it is a business day. Let me ask you this, though. If the key, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud, I mean, if the key to breaking these paper markets is a recognition of the fraud, right? A recognition of the scam, of the leverage, of the, you know, I mean, it's a joke. Wouldn't it be a lot easier to break silver first and then just by osmosis have people go, oh, well, shit, if the silver market is this way, well, then we know the gold market is too, and then there's a rush in gold and the whole thing collapses. Silver is an entire global market. It's what, like $18 billion or something like that? I mean, central banks don't own any. Governments don't own any. There's, you know, they're, talk about just-in-time delivery. I mean, they take it out of the ground and they sell it. And we've had supply deficits for the last, depends on who measures it, either the last 5 years or 15 years. Now, I know there are hindrances put in the way. I mean, you can't just go in, somebody can't go in and buy 20,000 contracts on the COMEX and take delivery because there's position limits. And we've seen what they've done in the past, the Hunts and even Warren Buffett, right? But that does not preclude somebody from going in the over-counter market like you talked about or trying to come at them from different markets all around the world, London included. Why doesn't somebody break silver first? And then just, you know, hey, let's just see if the snowball starts rolling and it wipes out gold at the same time. I mean, am I missing something? I mean, what's wrong with that idea? And why doesn't it happen?
Right. Well, again, if one buys over-the-counter silver, then again, you're just playing the paper game. It's part of the 5,000 tons that get cleared every day in London. However, really this is gets back to why the ABX is the first electronic physical exchange that can trade in institutional size. That's the key, institutional size. That will allow exactly what you're talking about. And yes, I agree, silver will be the market that breaks gold. And if you can then trade at the same side speed as you can as an over in the over-the-counter markets at no extra cost, and you can trade in a physical market, and you buy your silver, you will then physically need to have that silver vaulted, unlike just cleared amongst a bunch of banks in the part of a 5,000-ton settlement clearing during at the end of a day. So yes, I agree with you. And silver, what we need, this is the key, we need an electronic physical exchange that is fully allocated. There is no such animal out there in institutional size, and it's so important to put it on to list it in that way. I have, as I say, second tier bullion banks who are not part of the group of six who have bank accounts gold accounts with the Bank of England. That they're all tied together. Silver is used to weigh on gold, etc., etc. We all know the story, but really, essentially, if you're able to trade with a physical product, and you know that every time you buy, whether you take delivery or not, is irrelevant because it has to be bought and vaulted anyway. Right. That will break the market. And as you say, it is at the margin, Craig. If you're a Samsung or a Nokia or you're one of these companies, you can't afford to run out of inventory. Right. And so you rely on just in time. So, if there was ever a delay, all hell would break loose.
Let me ask you something else about silver, though, Andy. And again, now I'm only looking at the COMEX structure because really it's the only place we have any data, right? We don't get jack out of London, right? Everything is so opaque there. We have no idea. We know how much actual metal is cleared paper versus physical every day. It's ridiculous, as you mentioned. But I've watched COMEX open interest in silver soar last year too. I mean, you know, back Andy. 2011, when we were squeezing the commercials and we had that almost a breakage of the market in April of that year, and price got to $48, open interest in COMEX silver was routinely about 135 to maybe 145, sometimes 150,000 contracts. Last year, as price got to 21, open interest got to 224,000 contracts. I mean, it's 1.2 billion ounces of silver when the world only produces, 800 million ounces. So now, okay, so then they run price back down and wash some of that back out. Well, now this year, price just peaked out, 2 weeks ago at 18 and change, and they ran open interest all the way back up to 215,000. And the commercial positioning was as bad, as heavy at 1850 as it was at 21, and as I said, far worse than it ever was at 48. Again, I'm just only looking at COMEX, and so maybe it's too myopic and it's not enough big enough of a picture, but is that enough of a sign that there's some real stress and even fear within the silver commercials to keep the silver price from breaking higher? Because if they know we start going to 21 and 25 and 30 and it feeds on itself again, that they're doomed?
Yeah, and I think you've said it exactly right. And I deal with a lot of my clients are large size asset managers. And they all, without exception, say to me, I just need to own some silver. Number one, I can't vault it. It's just too right. It's too bulky.
Right.
I can't. In other words, I've got to play the game. And so there's what you're seeing. You're seeing, people that don't have the facilities to vault it. It's very expensive to vault silver. You need a proper exchange that is going to an exchange that is able to do that for you. And when you click your buy to know that physical is there, T plus zero in a vault, ready and to back up that position, you're no longer a naked short. You're no longer a naked long. And yes, this open interest that you're talking about is a lot of these asset managers saying, well, it's the only way of getting exposure. Now, they've got to perform. So if they see the price suddenly come down because they see a rinse going on, well, they're going to have a position where they're going to have a short position, like a stop. And so that's exactly right. We just saw that the other day. So all these guys are saying exactly what you're saying. Yeah, we need some exposure to silver. It's so bloody undervalued. We know it's undervalued. We want a contract that is physical. We know we've got it, and we'll just accrue it. And then you've taken this same open interest that's in the COMEX that is as when you come to first notice day, and it's time to fully fund that contract, even if you've still got that open, that position open, and you come to first notice day, it's the game of who blinks first.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a short, you don't have to prove you've got that silver. You just say, I've got silver.
Right.
If you're a long, you have to damn well fund the whole position. Well, again, so no one's ever going to take delivery. And so the whole thing collapses. So it's just a game of forcing them out so that they in other words, knock the price down enough to say, well, hang on a minute. No, let me just unload this position. I'll rebuy it in another front month. And the game goes on. So, yeah, you're right.
Doesn't it seem like nobody in this current market structure has an incentive to see the price go higher? I mean, you've got the buyers, the consumers of silver, Silver Users Association, all that stuff. Hell, they don't want price to go higher. I mean, they love having price still be what it was 40 years ago. And you talk about sovereigns wanting to accumulate gold for the logical reasons, expecting a reset in the new financial paradigm and everything else. But why would a sovereign like China want to force silver prices higher when all their solar panels that they're building and cell phones and everything else, they don't want to do that to their business? So it seems like nobody on the consumer end wants higher silver prices. And obviously, the banks don't want silver prices. The idiotic CEOs of these mining companies that just play along because I think they've got radiation sickness from being in the sun for so long out there breaking rocks that they can't see clearly of what's going on. And so they just continue to play the game and they need financing and all that kind of stuff. And it seems like nobody has an incentive to call the market to the carpet and break it. And it wouldn't take much to do it, as we said. So, I mean,
Yeah, exactly right.
Is that a?
But it needs a physical market to break it. It cannot be the paper market that breaks it, and because it's the concentration of position, isn't it, Craig? I mean, you know, yeah, you've got all the asset managers that I speak to say, yeah, it's undervalued. I want it, but they're a diverse group, and then you've got a couple of major banks who control pretty much every single position. In other words, you control 40-50% of the marketplace, and it varies between 40-50% of the concentrated positioning. Then you know very well that you're always going to, when you play the game of who blinks first, you are going to be able to flush out all of these paper positions. So all I'm saying really is, when we transit to be able to say to these same asset managers, don't play in the COMEX. Here, buy physical,
right,
electronically, but it's vaulted. Then all of a sudden, and this is what I'm talking about, this is the outflow of critical lifeblood paper market liquidity into the physical market. They cannot enter that market. You cannot sell something you don't have. And that's the key. And I think this is the point I'm trying to get across to everyone. It is happening.
Yeah.
And that's why, and silver is a perfect example of that.
Let me ask you one last question. And I mean, again, I want to be respectful of your time. Just your thoughts on this announcement, whatever it was, a couple of days ago, last week, that Thomson Reuters and the CME are quitting the London Silver Fix. You know, they reconfigured that thing 2 or 3 years ago, and CME and Thomson Reuters came in and kind of to help run the show, and now they're saying, you know, the heck with this. Are they just, is that rats fleeing the sinking ship? You know, all this lawsuit stuff is all about the silver fix and the collusions about the fix and everything else. Are they just like front running everybody else and trying to get out of there before everybody? I mean, is it significant news or is it not?
You know, if you can't control a market, you know, regulations are coming in. There's been admissions of rigging. There comes to a point where plain bullion banking is simply not profitable.
Right.
And so that translates through, if you're not going to get the volume, so then why be in the business? So you see that what you're seeing is the tip of the iceberg saying, well, hey, I don't see the volume coming through anymore. So why be in this business? And that translates all the way down the line to a bullion bank saying, I don't want to be in this business anymore. And if I can't control it, if I can't rig it, then forget it. You know, I'll move on to other things that I can control and rig. And that's really what we're seeing. So, yeah, very important point.
And I should ask you one last thing about all of these class action lawsuits. We had the one, or I guess it's a couple combined, I guess, that finally slipped through and got through that barrier into legal discovery, which is where they are now. And you know, obviously they're poking and looking under the covers, and that's where we're getting these texts and these emails and everything else is from that discovery process. And now we're hearing of other class action lawsuits that are being filed in Canada and in other places. Do you think that may be finally reaching a critical mass? I mean, it's a process. It's not something that happens overnight. I mean, anybody that's been involved with anything in the legal system, you know how that works with stays and delays and all that kind of stuff. But do you think that is helping? Is that an important part of the puzzle too?
It certainly is. And I think this is the other thing. obviously, I think we need to get the producers to be part of those class action suits. And we all know the story there, Craig. Do you actually go and pee in the face of your banker?
Right.
Who could literally put you out of business, overnight. Call your lines in overnight, and take you over.
Yeah,
and take
yeah, good point.
And so you know, and this is the point. So this is the other point: is that this is the other thing that by having a fully institutional grade exchange that attracts the attracts the financiers to finance these producers in a way that is not predatory, who does not stand there throwing their daily product in at market after rigging it lower at the fixes and all the games that we know. It essentially, If you've got financing, which is again part of having an institutional exchange where there are financiers, people that want to finance these banks because it's low risk, they've got a forward contract that they know is real, they're not leveraging it, they're not collateralizing it 50, 100, whatever time, 500 times over in the case of silver. So it's just a really nice, if you're getting a return for a real product. So it's risk reward. So all of a sudden, you've now got this same producer saying, screw, I've now got financing. I'm going after these guys because they lost me money. And believe me, once you start digging down, once this happens, you're going to see a rash of lawsuits from these producers who have alternate financing. And that's the key. And that is coming too. There is so, this is a perfect storm coming up. This is, yeah. We've never seen anything like this. These guys, these too big to fail banks, these six banks, primarily too, but these six banks have controlled everything. Why? And they are just simply agents of the central banks. And anyone who doubts it, please go back to the Eddie George comments and see why. Absolute clear evidence that the officials are involved in the gold market trying to suppress it. So anyone who doubts that, please Google it.
Let's put a bow back on this thing and sum it back up, Andy. You wrote this thing a couple of weeks ago because of what you saw, and you know, based on mm-hmm. all your history and experience and the people that you know, what was going on. And there are these doubters out there that think, well, just because price has gone down, you know, from what we couldn't really have anticipated, all of this Fed jawboning last week, and now the 100% certainty that there's going to be a rate hike next week has led to spec long liquidation of folks that, you know, just like we saw in each of the past two Novembers before the last two rate hikes. Because price is coming down, some of these sovereign bid levels that you talk about have been moved down lower too, which is what any logical person would do. They think, if I can save $10, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of ounces, well, I'm going to save $10 and move my bid level down. But nothing as that got you so excited, that has you so excited, has changed, right? I mean, you're still expecting along a timeline of sometime in the next, what, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, these dramatic changes, the paper market to fall into the abyss, as you call it, and finally break once and for all. Did I sum all that up pretty well?
Craig, even more so. And this, I see this as the final rinse. I really do, because we've never had this situation before where we've had so much uncertainty, so many people coming into the gold market. We're not even talking about Sharia demand. We're not even mentioning any of that stuff. Right. You know, we're just talking about the sovereigns and the central banks saying, I need to compete with the US, I need to compete with the other central banks, and only having gold. Gold is the only thing that talks. And I honestly believe that that China has already accrued more than 12,000 tons of unrehypothecated gold, and it's salted amongst all the state-owned banks, which are not required to report as part of holdings, but overnight with a keystroke could be called central bank reserves. And so we see that. We see this accrual going on all over the place. And I see, and if we want a timeline, and I think that here's your buy window. I think your buy window is until March the 15th when we see FOMC. We know very well this rate hike is baked in. I pray it happens, because at that point there, it's a sell the news rally. Everyone can move on. How many, you know, really, honestly, uncertainty, has that vanished? Right. Has it not got even worse now by adding more debt, essentially?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, so of course not. So, you know, this is your buy window. And I think if you're a margin trader, for God's sake, you know, start thinking about getting allocated. And I know that some people need to trade on margin. I know they do, because it's their living. But wait till we've got the fully allocated market to trade in, where you can trade in the same degree as you can with the COMEX, but except that you have a physical market and it can't be gamed, because your physical is untouchable by somebody else.
Right, which everybody should be doing at the individual level as well. You know, like you said, the time to convert your unallocated or your ETF shares and liquidate the paper and buy the physical, that time is now. It is not, you know, after this has all started to take place. So, Andy, I got to tell you, we'll wrap at this point because you've been extraordinarily generous with your time. We're at like 50 minutes, so I think I'll give you rest of the day off. I know.
We do need a beer.
Well, and I think if anybody listening, I mean, obviously, you're about the only guy that I know that watches this stuff 24/7 like I do. And so, you know, when you and I, that's what makes it so much fun for you and I to talk, because you and I can talk to each other about this stuff because we, you know, it's like we're brothers from another mother, right? We've been sitting here, we see the same stuff, we talk the same language. And so we could talk for hours, but I had better stop
now. We have a passion.
Yes,
we have a passion.
That's exactly right.
And I think
right.
I love people that are passionate about anything they do. And this is just all it is. You know, we see this is so exciting. I have never been this excited about events that are about to unfold. This is a historic moment. Right. And I know we've seen it before. But no, from a physical market perspective, this is different.
Well, and you've worked hard. You've dedicated your life for these last however many decades to getting to the spot. So you should be excited. And now we'll just hopefully we will sit back and hope we can beat them. My friend, let's keep in touch. I know, like you've referenced ABX a couple times and the exciting things, market changing things that are coming there. Please keep us posted, and when you're ready to roll that stuff out, let Tom know, and we'll do our part to help out.
Oh, I think I will, and I'll come and tell you, because it's going to give you the heads up before we see a very large move.
Can't wait. All right, Andy, thank you so much for your time, my friend. Again, everybody, check out Andy's company, Gold Star Global. You can Google him. You can Google that. You can find out more about Andy and what his services are. And again, we give that obviously a big thumbs up for a man of great integrity and who is definitely out there fighting on our side. Andy, thanks so much, my friend.
Hey, Craig, it's been a pleasure, as always.